This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to the show. What a amazing start to the Formula One season. Really great race, guys.
Yeah, just what we wanted. That was just what we wanted.
Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Clearly, his wife, the Olympic swimmer, has definitely had him on her training regime. I think she's had him in the rivers in the Finland.
Pool. Yeah. In the rivers? Hopefully in the pool.
But stunning performance. Stunning performance. And
really,
that last lap. He was half a second quicker than anybody on that last lap.
And the margin of victory and the fastest lap. So he's 26 points for today.
Yeah, and I'm not getting it. I understand that. The whole fastest point got to be in the top 10 because you wouldn't drop out of the points to try to go for the last lap. You heard Valtteri say, hey, we've got, you know, we could actually stop, do a pit stop and still go for fastest lap. And they were like, no, that's a little risky. But he was that confident.
Yeah, he was in there.
All right, well, I'm going to give out the phone number in case anybody wants to join the show. 512-643 live, 512-643-5483. Give us a call. Tell us what you thought about the race. But yeah, guys, dominant race by Valtteri Bottas. You've been talking about him a lot, Jonathan. Like, I think now or never kind of thing?
My race prediction, was it not?
Well, that's true.
Well, here's the story.
You called it, buddy.
After last year, he was written off. And I remember saying at the end of Abu Dhabi, because it was a rotten year, that he's got to go back home, just as Vettel needed to do, and rethink this. Because I know he's got the talent, and he showed, you know, at times he has, but he just had a rotten year. Now, the reason that also everybody's talking about it is Ocon is sitting there next to Toto Wolff. And a lot of predictions, including BBC Five Live, they were admitting, saying that before the season started, that and if you notice, so too did Lee Diffie, saying, hey, give somebody a chance, now or never. So he is starting. I'm not saying he's going to have the season like this, but what a great way to start. An emphatic start, an emphatic win. His confidence will be sky high now.
Well, if you recall last year, remember I criticized him. I remember specifically after being kind of soft, letting a couple of passes happen, people pass him and not being aggressive. Mm-hmm. And he was aggressive to get around Hamilton and then just had the right, you know, he had the right car to keep the race. But man, it was dominant, really amazing. And what about Hamilton? Les, what do you think?
What about him?
Well, just,
I was surprised. He was struggling. He was not keeping pace with Bottas at 1.22 seconds.
Yeah, I know.
To the rears. And that's huge. That's a giant lead in anybody's race, much less against your teammate and Hamilton as your teammate. I just got a question. What wasn't working on Hamilton's situation today?
I don't know. And I really don't know. He was he had a couple of strange radio kind of complaints. He said way before he pitted that he didn't think the tires could last. And then he also said, why did you pit me early? Because Valtteri obviously stayed out for over 10 laps more.
Yeah, quite a bit. But and they gave the briefest response to that. It sounded it was to run blockade for the Ferraris and keep the pace.
Well, and in fact, in that respect, Mercedes did it perfectly because they put Hamilton out in early. He got out ahead of the Ferraris to cover them off.
Exactly.
I guess what Hamilton was saying is, you know, have you made this a race for Bottas? Because they held him back and still got him out ahead of Leclerc, which was the real worry, was that if he came in at the same time as Hamilton, he would come back out and he would be dead behind Leclerc, which gives Ferrari a chance to kind of stop him. And as I said before, you know, Australia's hard to overtake. And if you get behind somebody, as we saw with Giovinazzi, several examples, aren't there? Norris trying to get past and the rest of it. It's really hard to pass. So strategy in the pits is key.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be quite honest, I'm really happy to see Valtteri up there, but I'm a little wondering if, you know, certainly there were some team orders, if nothing else through strategy, that favored him over Lewis. But
that seems odd, doesn't it? I mean,
exactly. It's kind of curious the way. I'm curious the way it played out. Let's wait a couple more races and we'll really know. Yeah.
Well, you heard Lewis in his interview with Martin Brundle at the end there saying, you know, he does, can you put your finger on what was the loss of performance? He goes, yeah, I think I can, but I want to talk to my engineers. And I think, obviously, you know, hey, listen, the truth is, it's Mercedes as a team, but the two engineers and the two drivers go in their own direction.
Separate garages.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, hey, I think bottom line is, if read between the lines, he was beaten from the start and he never looked back and he was in the zone. I mean, that was Tiger Woods at his finest time.
Yeah.
I mean, he even said, that's the best race of my life and I don't know what just happened.
Yeah.
Mercedes 1-2 again. We're used to seeing that. Reverse the order though. Max, third place. That was a good showing for him.
A good showing for him. It's a good showing for Honda, guys.
Yeah. That's the story. That's a huge story.
Massive.
Oh yeah. It's been quite a while.
Well, what? First podium for Honda since 2008, back with who?
Jenson Button, probably. Yeah. Back in the BAR days. Oh, so there you go.
That's huge.
It is huge. And I was just reading up, 2 years ago, so less than two seasons ago, McLaren had scored 0 points with that Honda engine.
Wow. Yeah.
And were at the bottom of the Constructors' Championship.
Huh. All righty. So flashing back to last year, or even if you watched the F1 documentary on Netflix, you got to look and see where Red Bull compares to McLaren Renault. And there's quite a span. Lando Norris was the McLaren driver in 12th with that Renault.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic result for McLaren and for Norris in his debut race in Formula One, just outside the points. A really good vaunt forward, yeah.
Surprise finish, I think, is... Jonathan, I think you're going to win that, even though my Pierre Gasly was one spot ahead of Lando. Are we giving the extra 1 point?
What, for long shot?
Yeah.
My long shot was Norris, but that was long... Yeah, no.
That was for the win, so yeah.
I won the winner one.
Yeah, you predicted
the
winner.
You called the winner. Got it. Looking back through, Charles Leclerc, so happy to see him right behind Vettel.
Yeah.
Quote of the day for me, Daniel Ricciardo just said to the BBC, gutted for sure. In fact, literally, I hit a gutter.
Yeah. God, that was crazy, wasn't it? When he, you know, you don't see that on the main straight like that.
I tell you what, that won't be there next year.
Yeah, you don't. So
oh, exactly.
If you didn't see it, if you didn't see the replay or whatever, he went wide and went in the grass a little bit right at the very start of the race and hit this gutter or whatever. And
it'll be a drain system underneath. Yeah.
And exploded literally the front of his car and broke it underneath.
To be fair, that doesn't surprise me. I know that turn one and it has been waterlogged, i.e. that front straight can get waterlogged very quickly, and I bet you that is actually a drain right there.
It won't be there next year. It might not be there next week. that was a violent... I mean, he's lucky he didn't lose it completely.
I tell you
right
what,
there.
He startled the honey badger just below it.
I'll tell you, my thoughts are, as abrupt as that was, hitting a gutter that's moving at 0 miles per hour, hitting that and it launching him, could have been a back injury.
Yeah.
And it could have been a catastrophe if it had gone straight on
till tomorrow
at turn one.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, guys, we got a caller. We got George from Virginia. George, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for staying up late with us.
Happy St. Patty's Day, too.
Thank you. First time, long time. Been trying to call in, so glad I can start the season off right.
Hey.
Good deal.
A couple of things. I think, one, this race marked sort of a turning point with a lot of youth, but I'm going to concentrate more on the back of the grid. It's really disappointing. Point to see Williams literally being a moving chicane. I mean, it brought up Minardi without feel good. I mean, this was just plain sad. Yeah.
And did you notice the times that sadly Kubica was doing? I mean, his fastest lap was 130.5. That's 5 seconds slower than Bottas.
Isn't there a rule that you have to qualify within,
107?
Yeah, no, he was within the, for qualifying, he was within the 107, but his lap times during the race were, you know, nowhere.
And another thing is Haas. Haas has some internal problems they got to clean. I don't know if they're, I mean, this is a harsh word I'm about to use, but are they sabotaging Grosjean, or there's just some bugs that they haven't figured out? I have not remember seeing F1 pit crews make so many mistakes. I can see a lug nut here and there, but they're just making some things I thought they would have cleaned up. Straight DNFs in Australia, they have to go in and kind of, they got to move people around or something.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Netflix documentary, but of course they made a big deal of that last year, and I almost think it was the same damn tire. I mean, it couldn't, if it wasn't for bad luck, he wouldn't have any. One theory is it's that they've got American lug nut wheel turns, and they're down in Australia, so they're going the wrong way. Well, okay. I'm trying to put some levity into it, George. It's just a terrible story.
Yeah. Hey, okay, you're right.
I'm gonna make a bet with you guys.
Uh-uh.
The first driver let go this season is gonna be Grosjean.
Oh, ooh. And you know what? I'm not gonna say that's a terrible prediction. I was kind of thinking that earlier because you know it's such a confidence striker too. You know, he's coming in and I wouldn't be surprised, George.
And my last comment, I know I don't know how many people are. I don't know why the media, the F1 media, floats these balloons out in regard to, you know, we heard, oh, Renault's going to make big leap, or Ferrari, you know, through the front wing has a second and a half on Mercedes. Either they're blowing wind up our, you know, what's, or some of these teams are just underperforming because from testing to Melbourne, all that stuff went out the window.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll put my hand up. I was an F1 journalist and reporter, and the truth is we know nothing. Because the teams don't tell us anything. So yeah, you're right. Journalists and the media come up with radical ideas and basically take a few bits of testing information and go, oh, well, you know, Ferrari are going to, you know, they're going to stroll through Australia. Yeah. They've got this. But of course, no one really knows. And they're changing the car literally overnight from Thursday onwards because of modern technology and cloud technology. So Mercedes are working round the clock to get what they got onto the grid. And it proved brilliant today. I mean, here's the fact you want to remember. Bottas, yeah, we'll all celebrate that with him. He and Hamilton were 33 seconds up the road than the two red cars. And that's the truth of where everybody is, because you don't hold back in a race.
Well, one quick question. Is Williams, I'm hearing parts weren't ready.
They didn't make the first test.
Yeah, they were late in Barcelona. Is this a money issue? Is this a leadership issue? Is this, Frank is royalty. This is sad.
It is very sad to see. And you know what, George, you're absolutely right. It's both. They have not got anywhere near the budget. They always struggled in this department. It's a strange thing, but Williams have always struggled. Even when they're at the top of their game, they always struggled. They don't pay their drivers a lot. They've had pay drivers like Maldonado and a few others. But the truth is, they've got a leadership problem. Claire Williams, I think, is doing as good a job as she can do, but she's not a technical director. Paddy Lowe is meant to be ruddering the ship, and he's on a leave of absence and was basically blamed for the fact that the car wasn't ready in time for the first test. Once you don't go to the first test, you're on the back foot, and you're right, they hadn't got parts ready and so on and so forth. So yeah, Paddy Lowe, their leader and supposedly the most experienced guy there, is not there. And so yeah, frankly, they are at sixes and seven, Williams are. And if you've ever, you know, like you say, you know your history with Frank Williams, it's such a sad thing to see. I've been in the museum at Williams and seen all their fantastic cars and their world championships. When they were with Renault, they couldn't be stopped. And they were, you know, in the early 90s, the greatest team there was. And now, sadly, it's awful to watch, actually.
All right, thank you, Jim, gentlemen. I'm going to hang up and just enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, thanks.
Hey, thanks, George. Tune in anytime.
All righty, George. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Good guy.
Great insight.
Yeah, but it's true. It's sad with Williams right now. It's really incredibly.
And he knows. I mean, he was like, you know, the legacy of Frank Williams. That's exactly it. And I feel the pain because, yeah, he's obviously been following Formula One for a long time, because people coming new to Formula One wouldn't think too much of it. But when I was, God, when I started in Formula One, I mean, Williams, I mean, that was, wow.
They were all over.
And by the way, it was Nigel Mansell, it was Alain Prost, it was Damon Hill, it was David Coulthard. I mean, these were the top guys.
Okay, so now you're in charge. Do you dare tell Claire to step aside?
I actually do. I actually think it's worth a powwow with Dad and the family to say what is the best thing. And I think that's Frank's call and it's Claire's call. Or the alternative is you bring in a Zac Brown type figure, as yeah. McLaren did, and he runs the team. She's still the president of Williams. I think she does a great job, but I don't think she's ever been. She's not a Ross Brawn or a, you know what I mean? She's not a team leader. Paddy Lowe is the guy meant to be running the race team.
All right, guys, we got to take a quick break. You're listening to Speed City. We're live in Austin, Texas. Back after these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. Power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built, Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin, online at DucatiAustin.com.
Hey beer people, it's Christine Sellers.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellers Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellers doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellers White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellers, Austin's original craft brewery.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk 1370.
Hello, I'm Felipe Massa, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Welcome back to the show.
Big day for Brazilians.
For Felipe
Nasa and Pipo Durrani won the Sebring.
Oh, that's right. That's awesome. Nice.
Brasilia.
Yeah, I was watching our local boys, More Speed, and their car went out.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
Broken axle.
Don't say suspension.
Something to that effect. Don't say suspension. Well, yeah, we kind of know one of the suspension
I have a vested interest. My son is a mechanic on that team.
IMSA mechanic.
I know.
Cool,
isn't that crazy to say?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool. All right. Hey, if you want to join the conversation, 512-643-LIVE, 512-643-5483, and we now have Michael on the phone from California. Hey, Michael, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you for an invite back. I had a question about DRS, and that is, if I'm saying it right, that's the flap on the rear wing that opens and closes. Is that right?
Correct. Yes,
how often is that, like the press to pass or push to pass on the IndyCar? They have so many times they could use it.
No, it's the equivalent of it. It gives you an advantage, but you can only use the DRS in the DRS zones, of which there were three in this race, and only when you are within a second of the car in front of you. So the point is, you have to basically use your regular wing to get up there. But then it was a device devised to create more passing. But now, hopefully, we continue to develop towards 2021, hopefully we can get rid of DRS, and then the design of the cars with the higher wings at the back and with the less aerodynamically perfect front wing will create a situation, and I think it did a little bit today, where we see more overtaking. But the DRS is for that purpose.
And you don't like it because it's kind of gimmicky.
Well, I don't like it, yeah, because it just says, well, once I'm close enough, then you can't stop me passing you because I'm just way faster.
Yeah,
gimmicky
true.
Is our high school popularity contest taking place over in Formula E.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's Formula E.
Well, what do you think, Michael? Would you enjoy the race?
I did. I kind of took a loss with Ricciardo falling out.
Yeah.
But it's still early in the season. But I will tell you, it was, I saw half of it. The other half I was listening to on the radio on the way home from work. Lance Stoll, really impressed. I think he's kind of got that that block off the off his back to move forward with the new team. And did you notice there were like four cars pretty closely together that were in the top 10 coming in to the finish? I thought we were going to have a pretty close Monza 1971 finish at that time.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Hey, you obviously know your stuff. You know, I agree with you on Stroll, and I'll admit it right here. When Dad bought the team, I was like, that's a really good businessman, and if his son doesn't pluck up and get better, he's going to fire his own son, because Formula One is that kind of game, and Lawrence Stroll didn't make his millions by being a bad businessman. So I think you're right. I think he absolutely plastered Perez today.
Oh, yeah.
Perez was 13th. So that's I'm glad you spotted that, because that is a big victory for Stroll. First time in the car, or first time with the team, because the team hasn't changed. It's literally the only two new people are Lawrence and his son. So Lance did a really good job there. And, you know, fly that Canadian flag. I almost look at that as a second American team, because the guy that runs the team is American, and obviously the Strolls are Canadian. So there's quite a big North American influence there.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, speaking of American drivers, I would say that probably by the end of the year, you could see maybe a Newgarden or even a Alexander Rossi maybe just getting a one-off drive, somewhat like the 70s had with, you know, Revson and some of the other Americans, Lunger, jumping in and just getting a shot, maybe even at Austin or a selected race that's off-season. And quite frankly, I think if Newgarden wins the Indy 500, I think Penske probably wouldn't stand in his way to allow him to move to Formula One for a couple of years. I think it would be good standing there.
Jonathan, you said that last year. You said Newgarden.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody.
I think Newgarden's the most obvious. I don't know if I would agree. I would think that, put it this way. We all know we need an American to sort of get this thing really going here in the States. And I do think that there's a lot of people who understand that. I would tell you to watch out for Juan Manuel Carrera and Logan Sargeant driving for Carlin this year in the FIA F3. So GP3 of old. But he's
both Americans, yeah.
Both Americans.
Yeah.
And both, you know, Logan Sargeant, especially in his karting days, was brilliant. And I think you're going to find that this guy could be the next big hope.
I totally agree. And I think that if once we get some more American press or more press about Americans, except, you know, we seem to have it in Autosport and in some of the foreign papers and magazines. But I think that I think you're totally right. And I think that the Formula 3 and Formula 4 series here in the state lends an option for Americans step up.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a couple of F3 and F4 races myself this year, and I'm looking forward to that. Those FIA scoring points means that they get points towards their super license here in the States, and that hasn't happened in the last few years, until the last couple of years. So yeah, people like Kyle Kirkwood and many Cameron Das are all scoring FIA points now towards super license, and that's the key. You're spot on.
And you know what, I really, as you mentioned, I think American has to go to Europe. Can't wait for an invite, be invited to the circus.
No, you're absolutely right.
The Formula One circus. And you have to go over there, but you also have to promote it. USA Today should get a report how Logan's doing here in the States, like a Monday morning report. Hey, this is where I finished at Brands Hatch or wherever the races were.
Darn it, Michael, you've given me an idea. I think I'll call USA Today and offer up a report.
Okay. Hey, I'll let you guys go. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks for listening, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
All right, we got another caller. We got Andy P. calling back in from Chicago area. Andy, how's it going, buddy?
Good.
What'd you think, man? What about the race?
Very interesting. It was very much kind of very Valtteri Bottas type of race, don't you think, at least from the front?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, he just kind of smooth as silk type of deal. Just some observations on just kind of the whole weekend. Boy, this year the margins are really razor thin.
Yeah.
You got to nail your qualifying on Saturday to get in position, and you also got to nail the race strategy. You make the wrong tire call or something, especially in the mid pack. I mean, you can drop anywhere, like I said, 7th to 18th, really, really fast. Not careful. Second one, you know, sadly it was frustrating to see the Gremlins come up again for Haas, but you know, Magnussen with a solid P6. And then just kind of a question. Obviously, the tires here are harder this year than they have been in the past. Have Pirelli just resigned themselves to a one stop race? We used to see 2 and 3 stoppers. Just seems that seems to be going away. And do you guys think that's good or bad?
They've simplified the tires for sure. They've made it basically a hard, medium, and a soft. So I think that's a really good thing. But I don't think that necessarily you'll always see the strategy like today. I think Australia is one of those places where, like you saw with some of the guys like Kubica, for example, going out on a hard tire. That hard tire should last the whole race, but it won't be that fast. So I think when we come to other tracks, you might see, you know, people doing 3 or 2. It could be, you know, you can. I like the idea because I think there'll be some people who will go literally like Kubica did, coming in after 2 laps and swapping, and then trying to go the whole way without it and just doing a strategy that way. But
yeah, but here's also Andy was saying Pirelli's making those choices, but this is Liberty directing
Pirelli to say
this is the way we want the races. This is the way we want you to build these tires.
Sure.
So
it's a sort of think tank.
Yeah, and they can build whatever recipe they want. But to be honest, I'd rather see more pit stops in every race.
Okay.
It adds to the strategy. It adds to the complexity of the race.
Yeah, the excitement, the possibilities of what can happen. I mean,
possibilities.
Look at Haas.
Yeah. Put a nut on backwards.
I'm personally with Les on that one. I mean, you used to have the 2 and 3 stoppers, and then I used to think that used to really, you have to execute. You're going to have to execute anyway around the one stop, but if you mess that up, you're done.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Hey, Andy, on any of your 8 screens, does Grosjean's wheel get on properly?
I didn't see it. I mean, it took him about, 5 seconds to get on, and 50 laps later, his suspension broke.
Man, yeah. If it wasn't for bad luck,
You know, I just wonder if it was mental, because those guys had to have so much pressure, remembering last year, they're going, I got to get this right. Oh, damn it, didn't get it right.
Well, but, you know, when we saw a quick little replay, and you see the left wheel slide out slightly, and you see the brake components sticking out from under the wheel just for a flash there. So I wonder if there wasn't something, you know, on the spindle or something in there that was giving, and that might have been what was originally the problem with the wheel getting back on. So I'm anxious to hear if they'll go into more depth around that failure.
Yeah, it'd be worth looking at. What else? Is there anything through the whole grid that you were surprised at?
Gasly being out of the point.
Yeah,
biggest surprise. I mean, and that came back to, again, a strategy call. They brought him in. They kept him out a little longer than I would have thought. They brought him in. He gets stuck behind, ironically enough, the Toro Rosso, same Honda power, and couldn't really overtake. But I think that was more a characteristic of a circuit more than anything. You know, not necessarily a lack of power on Red Bull's part. But so that was kind of surprising.
All right, let me ask you another question. Are Honda back?
I think they're in the mix. It definitely sounds better, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it does.
And I think they finally got, I mean, this would have been 4 years. That's usually what it seems that the most manufacturers in this type of formula, which I'm not the biggest fan of these super complex engines. I mean, give me the V12s and have it scream again. And
No kidding.
Right back there. But I get it. This is the way everyone wants to go. So I wish them well. I hope they do really, really good, and then they can be back and contending, because we need a third team in there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, guys.
I'm with Andy. Let's do a 12-cylinder, about a 1.6 12-cylinder with all the...
I want people downtown Austin to hear it.
Let's think about this, guys, because, you know, we've been evolving, going towards more hybrid, more electric, following the market. Pretty soon, maybe we start going the other way and going back more and more retro and getting really highly sophisticated internal combustion, because they're going to go away on the street. So maybe they get more sophisticated and we
stretch out a lifespan here.
Big wheels and big noise.
Yeah. All right, guys, we have to take a break.
I would personally love it.
Yeah.
Because F1 should resonate in your gut.
Yeah, I agree.
Andy, thanks for calling in again, buddy. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
All right, you guys have a good one.
All right, thanks, man. All right, we got to go ahead and take a break. Listen to Speed City. We're live in Austin, back after these messages.
Hey, beer people, it's Christine Sellis.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellis Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellis doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellis White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellis, Austin's original craft brewery.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built, Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Talk 1370.
Jenny Gow from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. I want to talk now about a new American sponsor in Formula One. Ooh. And a new sponsor of Speed City, and that's Himalaya. And Himalaya, their website is Drive Himalaya. And when you go there, you are going to flip when you see when you see the vehicles that these guys build. They are crazy, incredibly cool.
Okay, you know, the only thing I can really relate this to without you looking at these images, think Land Rovers, the classic, awesome, you know,
British Land Rovers,
you know, all the cool vehicles there. Think of like Singer is to Porsche.
Good. That is a great analogy, because what these guys do, they take the Defenders, the classic Land Rover Defenders, the Defender 90s and the 110s, and they go to the nth degree like you wouldn't believe.
Formula One.
Yeah. That's
detail.
That is a great example, because the detail that Formula One goes into, these guys literally go that far when you start looking at every nut and bolt and every choice of every vendor, down to the fabric, down to the texture of the metals, the fat, you know, everything, every single detail. And then, of course, they modernize the drivetrains.
It's not just a restoration, though.
No. Yeah, they modernize the drivetrains. A lot of GMLS based, you know, the Corvette style and the transmissions. These guys are doing the full 8 and 10 speed transmissions. So you take the Defender 90 is a great example, because
Defender cool 90 around. Yeah.
is one of the most amazing off-road vehicles ever made. But when you drive that on the road, an original, they are not a great road vehicle, but these guys turn those into an amazing road vehicle, but of course maintain the incredible off-road.
Well, I'll say, I mean, yeah, some of the things that people didn't like about the Defender was the suspension and the frame and all these kind of things. Well, that's all starts fresh with a new frame.
You guys all talk technical. It's British born, and when restored, beautifully.
And then
American corrected.
A bit like myself.
American improved and corrected. How's that?
Exactly. All right. Exactly. I'll take that.
But it is. I mean, you can stay.
That's exactly what it is.
You can stay true to the Land Rover powertrain, or you can bring in some American muscle.
Yeah. That I'm looking on the website now.
It's diesel torque.
You got to take a look at something. Yeah, go to their Instagram Himalaya, Drive Himalaya. It's just really impressive, some of the pictures on there.
We're gonna have a lot more from these guys, and we're gonna talk
a lot
more.
I want that four-door pickup.
We're gonna get to drive some of these bad boys too, so that's gonna be the fun. So
sorry guys, I know I just said look at it. drivehimalaya.com.
that's it. All right guys, let's talk some more about the race. I don't know, so we talked all about Mercedes and Ferrari and Haas with their bad luck, but let's go down the grid a little bit. I mean, Alfa Romeo looking pretty good, actually.
Yeah, they were the
really
the first to take the planned pit stop, even though that was at 13 and so lap 13. And so from then on, they ran well. I mean, I was pleased to see that.
Kimi Raikkonen finishing eighth.
I was about to say, yeah, you know, let's not take anything away. I mean, it's funny. Charles Leclerc had some good runs last year, but if Alfa Romeo can consistently run in the top 10, that's a huge jump for the old Sauber team.
Yeah.
And it just shows, as we expected, that this sort of emergence of Alfa Romeo as another junior team with Haas to Ferrari is something to be reckoned with.
All righty. So you remember last year, Hulkenberg and Magnussen had their love affair?
Yeah, it's continued.
Apparently it's continuing. Yeah, that rivalry is strong. And Magnussen pushes Hulkenberg off into the grass again. I am just, you know, we're probably going to have to wait.
Hulkenberg does not like Magnussen.
We're probably going to have to wait till next year's Netflix documentary about this season to find out if he still holds that most unsportsmanlike conduct award that Hulkenberg presented. So,
hey, listen, if you know anything about the Magnussens, they don't race to you know, they're tough.
Oh, yeah.
They're Danes.
Well, during the race, Magnussen, who was it was about to pass him? And he was like, no, you're not. Oh, was it Hulkenberg?
Hulkenberg.
It was Hulkenberg. Yeah. And Magnussen was like, you're not coming around me.
Not again. Not again.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things. I mean, you know, but speaking of Haas, Grosjean, that botched pit stop at lap 15, the left front wheel again, six spots that cost him in just that short of time. That is how tight that midfield is this year. And I'm just thinking, throw in another pit stop or two into the race. That is going to raise the excitement so much, because something that quick cost him six spots in this. And you know, somebody else is going to make a mistake, you know, a little slight, little gliding off course, whatever it is. You know, I think that tire strategy.
Hey, speaking
and pit
of Magnussen,
driving,
you talk about, you know, the way he drives. I think he intimidated Giovinazzi for that pass.
Sure. And, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Like the way he came at him, I think that Magnussen's style made that an easy pass.
And I also want to point out, you know, when you look down at the results, Haas were the midfield winners, because the only people in front of them, Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes. And
best of the rest.
Yeah. So there's no question that they won that battle. Hulkenberg finishing behind with Renault, then Alfa Romeo, and then Racing Point Mercedes. So if that's the battle, first advantage goes to Haas.
Okay, but wait a minute. Giovinazzi, early on in the race, I think it was like lap 26, 28, somewhere through there, had a 27-second pit duration, and that was because he had a screwed-up left tire change.
Yeah.
And so he wouldn't even been back there in the pack if he was 4 seconds on. If he was on cue with the 23-second pit lane duration, he wouldn't have been back there. So taking that into account, and I think they will be much more effective in correcting this front left wheel problem. Mm-hmm. He may not even been back there to wrestle with.
Okay, so we talked a lot about McLaren, Lando Norris doing good, but they also had a fire, Carlos Sainz, and that was a pretty scary fire, actually.
Yeah, that doesn't bode well. I don't know what, obviously we won't know what went wrong with that yet, but yeah, that's not what you want to see, and it's not what Renault want to see. And if you remember, that was one of the complaints, was reliability with Renault.
Yeah, well, that was lap 11, and the suspicion, as we heard from Zach Brown, was it's a MGUK failure. And so we've seen that create fires in the past. Quite honestly, I'm kind of surprised it's still happening and that they haven't somehow captured everything that generates that fire situation.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Okay, so what about Daniel Kvyat back in a one?
I actually think he did a good job. He made a mistake at turn three and ran onto the grass, but that was because he was attempting an overtake.
Yeah.
And that was against Stroll.
Yeah, exactly. To be honest, you know, again, jury will be out on Daniel. He's the luckiest man in Formula One. Nobody gets a second or third chance at the bite of the cherry, and he is getting just that. It is his third chance in Formula One, effectively. I mean, he was with Ferrari last year as a sort of test driver or whatever, reserve. But he's back in a car and he's got a full drive with Toro Rosso. This is it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, when you talk about people coming back and Toro Rosso, I gotta think Brandon Hartley. I'm curious kind of how he is playing in the background of Ferrari right now.
Yeah, he's on the simulator. He's got a contract to work with Ferrari all year doing simulator work. He did that, of course, when he first started out with Mercedes. And I actually think he'll be a valuable tool to Ferrari in that that role. I hope to get him on the show, actually. I've put in some...
I bet we can get him on the show.
Yeah.
He's been on a few times.
He was racing today, Sebring.
Yeah, at Sebring. Well, so, you know, we were super excited when somebody besides Hamilton wins. Bottas has a great race. It was a really good race.
But it was an emphatic win. That's why.
It was.
The gap to Ferrari.
Yeah.
34 seconds at one point.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, here we are, Mercedes, Ferrari. So, I mean, I say Ferrari was stepping in there, but still, I want somebody besides Mercedes to win something. So there's that negative. That's the only negative I can come up with.
Well, I saw enough juggling going on amongst everybody else, and they better figure out what Hamilton's situation was.
Yeah, it's a strange one, and I hope stay tuned to your press and where you find your news, because I think that story will start to evolve, and the journalists will be on that tonight. I would have thought by the time we get to Bahrain, we'll have a different story. And of course, that's such a different place to go, different track. I mean, the track's coming up, Bahrain, China. I keep saying it, wait till we get back to Spain and then we'll make a judgment.
I was just looking at some of the photos and I was thinking about the interviews with Bottas. I like him because he's kind of goofy and nerdy. And on the podium, Mark Webber asked him, he said, what did you have
for
breakfast? And he said, I had porridge. Like,
No. What did you put in it?
Yeah, but he's just so goofy. I like that.
He's goofy in a good way.
Yeah,
he's very humble.
That's what I mean.
He is
who he is, and I like that. He's just a goofy, super fast race driver.
Exactly. He's not a typical Finn. He's he's like a lot of rally drivers I've met, you know. They're either really quirky, the Finns, or they're very quiet and unassuming and really calm and nice, and and both is good. I mean, Raikkonen obviously is the quirky.
Yeah.
Mika was definitely the quirky. Häkkinen, that is. Bottas is sort of between the two.
All right, well, let's go and take another quick break. And we're going to continue the discussion. Listen to Speed City. We're live in Austin, Texas, back after these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Hey beer people, it's Christine Sellers.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellers Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellers doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellers White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellers, Austin's original craft brewery.
Talk 1370.
Hello, I'm Jenny Gow from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we're really excited with our next guest on the show. We got IndyCar coming to town. Some of it's already here.
It's the biggest story right now in IndyCar.
Yeah, IndyCar.
Besides coming to COVID.
We got a local boy. This guy lives in San Antonio, and Jonathan and I sat down with him and interviewed Pato O'Ward. So let's go ahead and hear from Pato.
All right, Speed City fans. Man, we are excited. One of the biggest stories in IndyCar right now. We have on the show Patricio O'Ward. Patricio, welcome to Speed City.
Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you guys for having me.
Oh, excited to have you, man.
Yeah, no question. Pato is without doubt one of the, well, he is probably the hottest property to come into IndyCar. He had a bit of a false start, shall we say, but he's back in and he'll be making his debut, which I think is appropriate.
Sure.
Yeah, you won the Indy Lights Championship, but to come into Sonoma like you did, was that a surprise to you or not?
I think it was a surprise to everybody, to be honest with you. It was even a surprise to me because
it's unheard of for a rookie to barely even know the car and didn't even know the track either. And the series is so competitive. It's even more competitive this year, but it's unheard of to see someone just jump into the car and strike into the fast six and qualifying and then end the race in top 10. So that was really cool. I mean, I wasn't expecting it at all, but definitely gave everybody within the team a huge confidence boost.
Yeah, that's got to be huge because, you know, like you said, coming in as a rookie and, you know, doing as well as you did. But let's talk about where you are now with Carlin and what you're expecting. You know, this weekend, you're basically a home race too because you live in San Antonio, right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's the closest that I'm going to have to a home race. So that's really cool. And
San Antonio is only.
I mean, it's such a cool track. And I mean, I think it's really cool that IndyCar is coming to the premier road course in North America because IndyCar is the premier open wheel series in North America. So you know, it meshes well together. And I think it's going to be a really, really cool event.
Without going into the details, obviously we knew that you signed up for Harding and for whatever reason that deal went south and that left you without a drive. You must have been kind of, because it is all about timing, as you well know in this career, and if you have to sit on the sidelines even for one race, it must have been agonizing at St. Pete. I know you did some PR work for Carlin, but that must have been tough because I know you've won there before.
No, for sure. I mean, and I love racing in St. Pete, but I just have to get through this weekend, and I'm going to be in the car for the rest of the season. So fully focused in Austin, and fully focused with the new team. You know, they're a European based team, so it's a team that is very well respected, especially over there. They know how to win. They know the formula. So it's just a matter of time when we start winning in IndyCar. So I think we're going to be opening some eyes for sure.
Well, speaking of being in San Antonio, you know, not far, kind of a home race for you, you're going to have a home grandstand section. You're going to have 100 fans or so up in the stands for you. That's going to be awesome.
That's going to be awesome. I mean, I wanted to do something special because it was the closest race to home, and I've never really raced professionally in Austin. So when I heard we were coming to COTA and it got decided last year, I said, you know what? This is going to be awesome. So I wanted to do something really cool.
I think that's going to be so good. You've got access basically to turn 12, and that's where you're going to be, which is the hardest braking point. You've got a fantastic vista looking across to the tower and to turn 13. You can see the whole stadium section. So I think it's one of the greatest places to sit. And then if that wasn't fun enough, you got tickets to go and see Muse that night. So it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, no, for sure. And turn 12 is, I think it's going to be where we're going to be passing the most because it is a humongous straightaway.
Yeah. Yeah, but what
about, I think the people around there or the people that have access to see that are going to be in for a treat.
Yeah, and you're going to have 100 of your fans. You're going to look like the home driver there, man. That's going to be cool. And I'm excited for you guys to have that. But well, talk about, yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
Patty, you've got, let me talk about the year and the decision, because obviously that's the big news story it's the big news story of Indy at the moment, which is where is the Indy Lights champion going to end up? You've ended up with Carlin. You've basically going to share the car with Charlie Kimball. He was on the show last week. I think that's a great guy to hang out with and learn from. Obviously, Max Chilton, likewise, has got bags of experience from Formula One and now working with Carlin for many years. But I think the really cool part of the story is that you're going to be at the Indy 500, probably the only Spanish speaker next to Fernando Alonso, who can help Fernando get on the pace with Carlin.
No, that's going to be really cool. And I think, I mean, I'm definitely going to be picking his brain a lot because he knows more around his little finger than I do in my whole brain. You know, he has so much experience, and you can't buy that. So he's definitely someone that I'm going to be looking forward to working with. And I'm excited. I mean, Charlie's been in the sport for a while. Max, obviously, you know, he was in Formula One and now he's in IndyCar, but you know, they're guys that have a lot of experience, and it's going to be cool. You know, Carlin, like you said, you know, Charlie's doing 5 races and we're expanding to a 3-car team, the races that Charlie is doing, so I can race them as well. So that's going to be, it's going to be really, really cool. And it's going to be a bigger team than what they're used to.
I think it's so exciting for you. I want to talk about your career a little bit, but
but because I want the fans to know that you are, you talk about the experience of Fernando, and of course no one's going to argue with you there, but to be honest, at 19, when I look at your record and what you've done and what you've achieved, not just in single seaters, but in also in sports cars, you've raced in Europe, you've raced in, obviously in America, you've won titles in America already, Daytona, you know, the Rolex, all these sort of events, Petit Le Mans. So you've got a bag of good experience in sports cars, and that's got to be, you know, very valuable to you.
Y'all know for sure. I mean, I think I've driven almost anything I can up to this point, and I have a lot of seat time in very different cars, which I feel like that's what's helped me to adapt to different cars a lot quicker. And obviously, you know, they drive differently, so I've kind of gone accustomed to being able to drive in different ways. And you know, the IndyCar is the biggest beast I've ever driven, but it definitely everything else I've driven have definitely prepared me for it. You know,
well, you did some testing at Barber, right, in the new IndyCar. Speaking of the beast,
oh my God, it was physical.
And that's Barber an easy course. That's an easy one.
Oh yeah, and Barber is a super super physical smooth track. So like, I haven't been in a car in like 6 months, and I mean, I'm still, my neck is still sore.
Well, I can't tell you that Coda is going to be any easier, my friend.
Oh, it's going to be a blast, man.
Yeah, no kidding. I got to ask you, because, you know, we're always fascinated with the young drivers coming up, especially their stories, because I know you started in karts, you're from Monterey, but tell me about how, if you like, the fire was ignited with you. I mean, do you have any family background in it? I mean, I know that Esteban Gutierrez has also come out of Monterey, but it's not known necessarily, you know, for, I mean, Mexico has a huge history, but, you know, we don't get too many Mexicans coming through the ranks and coming up. How do you start in karting?
So I started karting when I was 6. My grandpa from my mom's side gave me a little go-kart when I was 3, but I couldn't really reach a pedal because I'm a pretty small person. But then when I got to 6, I finally got to drive it. And, you know, I started racing, little go-kart races there at the home track. And then it just escalated from there. I mean, the rest is history. And I've just, you know, gone up in through the classes. And then 2013, 2014, I made the switch to big cars. Did something in Europe. Then came back to the States and did Pro Mazda for 2 years, and did the IMSA, and then did Indy Lights, won the championship, and that's what basically catapulted me to the IndyCar series.
You know, Pato, I think you're one of the most exciting stories in IndyCar right now. With you talk about Alonso and all his history, but you have such a deep background that Jonathan talked about. What are you, only 19, right? So you have a huge future ahead of you. This is going to be really fun to watch you this weekend at COTA, and of course the rest of your career.
No, definitely. I feel like I've done my job, and I've learned a lot these past few years, and now I feel like such a more polished piece, and I'm just excited to get going, man. I mean, I've been waiting for this for months, you know, since the day after Sonoma.
Well, you're certainly ticking off the bucket list at 19. Let me hear a little bit about Race of Champions, and I saw the results. You beat probably some of, you know, your childhood heroes. I saw you beat Coulthard in one race and a world rally champion, rallycross champion.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I was there representing Mexico. I was with Team Mexico with so in the Nations Cup, I was with Esteban.
Yep.
And we got third. And then the individual one, it was so fun, man. It's been one of the most fun events I've ever done in my life, because it's so different to what we're used to. And I got to drive with Vettel, with Schumacher, against Coulthard, like against so many good people. And I was so close to make it to the final. I made it to semifinals, I was so bummed, because one of the car that I got, when you're coming out of the start, we were just using two gears, but going from first to second, the transmission clocked, and that's where I lost all of it. And I was so bummed, because I knew I could have made it there, potentially, you know, challenged for the win. But it was such a blast, and I want to go again, because it was definitely some of the best times I've ever had in you know, sort of race weekends.
Yeah, what were those little cars? Were they a KTM or something? It was a weird weird little car.
It was like a Mexican. So my favorite was the Mexican built one. It's called the Bull, B-U-H-L. And then the KTM Expo, Ariel Adam.
Oh, yeah.
They had some like funny UTVs, super slow. Oh, and then the rally cross. That was really cool. A big achievement that I did that I feel pretty good about myself is that I got to race against the two-time rallycross champion in Europe, and I beat him in the individual event. So that is what got me to move over to the semifinals. So that was really cool.
So yeah, Christofferson, he beat the world champion from World Rallycross.
It's so much fun, man. I mean, that car, it had so much grip. You can just throw it around, and I think the noise was the coolest of every single car that we drove. So I had a blast driving that thing.
So, well, man, I want you to bring as many people as you can from San Antonio up to little old Elroy, and let's have a party. Let's have a Mexican party, and let's get going. You are our local man. This is great.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it, man. I'm pumped.
Well, Pato Award, thank you for coming on the show. We're so excited to have a local driver from San Antonio. We're going to be rooting for you guys in Grandstand 12 section.
Section 12 or turn 12.
Turn 12, yeah.
That's where if you're a Mexican fan and you want to join one of our own, one of San Antonio's own and one of Mexico's own, come and down to turn 12. And Pato, just for sake, tell us your number and your social media so that fans can find you.
So the number still pending on that. We should be announcing very soon.
27?
And what?
What number do you want?
What number do I want?
Yeah.
You'll see.
Okay. I like it.
So we're going to be announcing that soon. And all my, so you guys can follow me in Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's all Patricio Award altogether.
Okay, great.
Easy enough.
All right.
Racing for Carling Motorsport. What a great opportunity. Thank you so much, Pato. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Pato. We'll see you when you get here to Austin.
All right. I'll see you guys next week. Thank you for having me.
I love this kid. I'm excited that we got somebody.
It's Patrick's Day. Perfect.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Mexican-Irish. What a combo.
All right. I just love it. There's going to be a Texan on the grid.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks. True. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Speed City. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Travel safe, y'all.
Ciao.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.